Welcome to Loud and Lifted. I'm your host, Betsy Hamm. Today's episode is for anyone who's ever opened their laptop and thought, great, what flavor of chaos are we dealing with today? Because we're talking about the three boss types that can quietly wreck your confidence and honestly, your career. The micromanager, the narcissist, and the bully boss. I'm joined by Linda Harvey. You might know her as the management guru from TikTok. And her mission is simple. She wants to help you lead, speak fluent corporate, and protect your peace at work without losing your edge. We dig into why this is so common. Hint, most new managers never actually get formal training. And what you can actually do when your boss is making work feel impossible. From practical train your boss moves to documentation strategies to knowing when the healthiest option is just a clean exit. Let's get into it. Welcome to Loud and Lifted. Linda Harvey, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited about this conversation.
Yeah, this is going to be fun because we're going to talk about some serious stuff. And I have to read just your bio from TikTok that says, teaching you how to lead, speak fluent corporate, and protect your peace at work, all without losing your edge. That's such a great bio and such a great intro. And I have to mention that's from TikTok because that's actually how I found you. A friend of mine is having a tough boss situation and she was telling me about it. And, you know, 10 minutes later after our conversation, she hangs up and goes, this is the next thing I see on TikTok. She's speaking to me. And of course, it was your video. So then I went down a rabbit hole listening and watching a lot of your videos on leadership and management. And I was like, oh my gosh, this woman is amazing. You have this great, very straightforward, no bullshit, but like, I feel like you're speaking to me in every video approach. So before we get into the content today, tell me, how did you become this huge voice on social media about management and leadership?
Yeah. So here's the thing. If you would have asked me if this is where I was going to be even 18 months ago, I'd have been like, I think maybe you have taken something, right? Because I am of a generation of you work until you retire, right? And that's what I thought I was going to do. I thought I was just going to go into the corporate world and work and then eventually like get old and not work anymore. And I was in this space in my career where I felt so confident. I felt so competent. I knew what I was doing. I like understood the work. I understood the assignment. I was crushing it. I mean, I was saving my company money. I was keeping attrition though. Like I was doing all of these things that really aligned with all of my skills. And I was so excited and I hated my job. Oh. I hated my job. And which was such a foreign concept to me because usually you don't like your job when it doesn't align with what you know, or you feel out of your depth or it's below you or you're bored. Sure. I was challenged. I had all of these things. And every day I was physically ill before I would go to work and I worked from home.
Oh,
so that was fun. And I started really kind of doing some assessments and realized that I was in an environment that felt very toxic to me. I had a leader that I felt was very underskilled for my performance level, right? Like where I was at, and someone who just really wanted someone, my leader at the time, wanted somebody to come in and do everything their way.
Oh.
They wanted me to come in and, I mean, I remember like I'm a head of a department, right? Like I'm a head of a department. I've been doing this for 10 years. I had saved the company over $600,000 in my first 6 months. Like taken attrition from like 10% to 1%. I mean, like no
small
numbers
feats. Were there.
I'm not talking like, I was just like, magnetic in a room. I was good at what I was doing. And I had this boss who was like, well, your staff meetings are too long. You need to have 2 30-minute staff meetings. And if you're not presenting a slide deck in your staff meetings are not effective. Hmm. And I'm like, you don't even come to my staff meetings. Like, why do I need to make this change? Well, that's how I do it.
Oh,
that's what I think is, that's what I think is the most effective. Right.
Yep.
And here's the thing. I came up in customer service organizations. I was building and scaling customer service organizations. That's full of humans who just want to be emotionally supported.
Sure.
They don't love the quick hits, right? My leader came up through sales organizations and could not see the difference between like what you are used to doing and what I am good at doing. And it was everything. Everything was, well, you didn't do it this way and this is how I would have done it. Oh. And it's like,
you're paying me for a reason.
I did at one point in time, I said with this person, I'm like, you don't need me in this role. You just need somebody who's going to take whatever order you give and execute whatever order that you give. That's not me. Oh no, I do need somebody in this role. I do need a dynamic thinker. I just need them to think the way that I think. And I thought, again, you don't need me. So, and I'm a very type A personality. I've got to have a plan. I've got to know what's going on. Like, I'm very structured. And I quit. I quit without a backup plan. I quit. I had just moved back into the country because my job told me I had to be back in the country. I moved back into the country for my job. I was living in an Airbnb. I had not signed a permanent lease to where I was going next. And I quit my job. My husband was in the process of finding work. I have two teenagers and I quit my job. Is how desperate I felt to get out of this environment. And I remember at the time thinking, if I could just recommit, if I could just focus differently, if I could just show up this way, if I could just do these things. And it just wasn't right. It just was not the right fit for me. And so I started my own company and I went out to try and train managers because I felt like my experience came from a manager who just was not trained.
Sure.
I came from a manager that just didn't have the skills to deal with different types of personalities or different kinds of performers. And I started my company and I was not getting enough traction. And so in May of this year, I went to TikTok. It was after the ban. Like, it came back. Like, this has been a whirlwind for me. And I just start putting out content, hoping that people would feel seen and not feel so alone and not feel like they were taking crazy pills when they couldn't understand why they were so miserable at work.
Well, you are totally killing it. And I think you have like, what, over 500,000 people following you between TikTok and Instagram. So
it's almost 700,000. Oh, so geez. It's been doing really, really well.
That's amazing. Well, and like you said, and I mentioned, it's your approach and you talk about things that people don't always want to talk about. And, you know, I think part of the issue in our world is we get so focused on results that we don't focus on the people piece of it. And people may be really good at a job, but that doesn't mean they're good at managing people. And that's very different. It's a different skill set. And I think we, as a lot of organizations, don't do a good job of making sure managers are supported or trained or coached along the way, because that manager should have been kicked the first time they said, well, you're not doing it the way I would do it. It's like, oh my gosh, that's a major, major red flag.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. So I love that you're doing this. So let's dig into some of these bad bosses of, you know, what does it look like and how do you not support that? How do you deal with that when you're on the receiving end? And I mean, perfect setup, the micromanager, which is clearly the one that pushed you over the edge and caused you to rage quit.
So first and foremost, I think it's really important, and you touched on it, like so many individual contributors. So our ICs in the organization are great at their jobs, like promoted into management. And there's a staggering statistic of 85% of new managers never receive any formal training, which is just jarring. And so many organizations no longer even offer, they don't even have in-house learning and development, let alone hiring like external companies. And the first thing that's cut in the budget, and before they even cut travel, they're cutting training budgets.
Right.
So you have all of these people who go into these roles, they get into these roles and they just mimic what they've seen, right? Sure. They're just like, my old boss did it this way, whether it's good or bad, right? Because again, most of these people who were individual contributors were never really managed. They were high performers. They were good at their job. They showed up and did the work. They showed up and did all of these things because they were invested in whatever it is that they were doing, or they have this innate sense of performance, right?
Sure.
And so they go into these roles, and that is where so many of these bad managers are born. But then they just do all of these things and they manage the way that they saw or the way that they think they're supposed to do it, or, you know, oh, well, if I bring down the hammer, then this is this is what a manager does because I'm a boss, right?
Right.
Because again, they've never experienced this. So this is where so many micromanagers are born because they were a high performer and they saw results and then they were promoted into this role. So obviously they were doing something right. And that is where you get that sense of, well, if you just do it my way.
Right.
Because they believe they'll see somebody who performs differently than them, right? They'll see somebody who maybe is like a middle of the road performer, which, spoiler alert, most of the best managers are middle of the road performers, right?
Oh.
They're people who like are invested in the work, but it's not so much about this work. It's about leading and growing teams.
Makes sense.
And so they're not always like the best performer. But these high performers who are now managers are like, well, I wouldn't do it this way. And you have to do it this way because they have never had to experience a pivot. Hmm. They've always been on that trajectory of like, I'm just really good at what I do and I don't have a lot of setbacks and I just kind of go forward, right? And so that's how they feel like they have to manage their team. And then when they have these people who perform differently than they do, they are so concerned with failure, which again is not a familiar feeling for them. They're just like, nope, you've got to do it this way. You've got to come in and you've got to do it this way. And this is the only way that you can do it. And that's seated in like a really deep, dark place of mistrust. It's really because they don't trust their individuals to do things different because they don't understand those things, right? So that's how a lot of micromanagers are born. And, you know, they'll say the words that I love to hear them use, well, I'm a perfectionist, right?
Right.
I'm like, welcome to business. There's no such thing as perfect.
Right.
Or, well, you know, I know. And my manager, when we were having it out, I'm a control freak and I'm never going to not be a control freak, right? Almost wearing it as a badge of honor, right? Like, well, I don't really care what you think because I'm a control freak and I love that about me. I'm like, okay, then you don't need me, right? But that's where so much of it is where people are saying it, but really it comes from a place of trust. So micromanagers don't trust you to show up. Micromanagers don't trust your process. Mm-hmm. Micromanagers live in this environment of mistrust, right? And there are actually two kinds of micromanagers. There is the most popular micromanager is the micromanager who micromanages again because they just do things differently than they do, right? And so they have to guide every single step of the process. And then the second type of micromanagement is I believe is an actual necessary evil. And these are the types of managers who you have shown them that you can't do the work. Mm. So you're constantly underperforming, you're late, you're saying things you shouldn't be saying, like you are doing all of these things and you've shown that you are not ready for this role or you're not capable of doing this role completely. And that's when people have to step in and micromanage. And it is a tool to help up level people. So sometimes it very much is a necessary evil. But I want to talk about the bigger one, the big one, where there are people who just don't trust you to do the things. And it's really important. I work with a lot of clients one-on-one and I get a lot of clients who are like, oh, my manager just micromanages me to death. And I'm like, okay, tell me what they do. Tell me what they're doing. And the key to combating a micromanager is through observation. And this is what people do not pay enough attention to because we're all the star of our own soap opera, right?
Sure.
And so everything's happening to me. But if you take a minute and step back and watch, what is it that they need? So if they call you every single day at 4 o'clock to get an update on where you are, you call them at 3:45. You make the phone call before they have the time to call you because what they are communicating is they don't believe that you are updating them enough. They don't believe that you are going to give them all of the relevant information. And so they have to call you at 4 before they can close their laptop for the day and go home. Micromanagers manifest this all of the time. They tell you through their micromanagement exactly what they need from you. And if you can get proactive and learn how to get in front of that and give it what they need or show them that you're doing the thing that they want you to do, that is one way to get a micromanager off your back.
Interesting. Makes sense. I love that. And because you're right, it's observing them and realizing like, okay, just start CCing them on stuff, even though it would pain you to have to copy them on that stuff. But if you can start to build that trust, hopefully most of them will change. I mean, I'm sure there's some that aren't. And then if you do have those ones, hopefully you could train. It's kind of like training your boss.
You really
right?
are like, training your boss. You truly, they are telling you how they like to be communicated with. They're telling you what they need. And you're showing up and you're giving them that and they're backing off.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. What happens if they don't?
So then you might have a situation like I did where it was, hey, I'm not going to back off because I am going to control every single move and I want you to be a robot and I want you to do these things. And then you have to decide if that's in your ability or not. Is this something that you can do? Can you show up? Can you surrender like your free will? And that's what I felt in my situation. I was like, I have to give you all of my free will just to keep my job. Then you decide, is this a worthwhile endeavor for me? Is this the place that I want to be? Because, you know, you can train your boss and you can teach them how to show up for you in a different way. And again, they weren't trained initially. So this is you're really customizing the training here.
Right.
but if they are unwilling to show up and they're unwilling to do those things, then you have to decide like, how invested am I in this position?
Right.
Is this the right place for me? Can I be personally fulfilled? And I think that's also where you tap into like, what are your personal needs? Like we could talk Maslow's all day long, sure. right? But what are my needs? And, you know, for me, my need is I need to feel trusted. I need to feel empowered. I need to feel autonomy, like all of these important things. And if I just am going through the motions, my mind is bored and I can't right. do these things. And then you evaluate, where do you go from there?
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And it's funny because I can think of just two different friends in that situation. One who probably will end up rage quitting or leaving. And the other one who's kind of like, you know what? I weigh out the pros and cons. I get to work from home. I do X, Y, and Z. It's fine. Like, you know, so it's just kind of balancing, you know, can you handle the situation? What can be changed? Can you train them? And then making that decision. So
yes,
I think that's great. Great advice. All right. Let's talk about another one that I feel like we don't talk about a lot. And that's a narcissistic boss. And you had some great commentary, especially around women, which is so true because you say a narcissist. I don't know why I'm stereotypical. I think of a man, but how about when you have a narcissistic woman boss? How does that look and how do we handle that?
So interestingly enough, their similarity, they're the same. They're the exact same type of person. But I think, again, to your point, we think only men in this, which I don't really understand why, because
I don't know either.
You know, when you really start to unpack it, you hear about like narcissistic mothers and narcissistic grandmothers and kind of the control. And I'm sure that there's lots and lots of studies that show us like how, why it's so deeply seated in women and in our female culture. But, you know, first and foremost, a narcissist is a very clinical term. And we need to like, just because they are mean doesn't mean they're a narcissist. Just because they like ignore you doesn't mean they're a narcissist. You know, I get a lot of people are like, they're so mean and they say mean things to me. I'm like, well, I'm not a psychiatrist. So I can't diagnose that they're a narcissist, but there are very similar patterns that are demonstrated when you're dealing with somebody who has narcissistic tendencies or is an actual narcissist. And these are people that never will take the blame. They'll never be accountable for anything, right? So you could come and say like, you punched me in the face and they'd be like, well, you made me. Like I felt backed into a corner. It was the only way that I could react to this situation, right? Like it's not because I misbehaved. It's actually because you did a thing and now I'm doing this thing, right? They have a tendency to gaslight you again, because they cannot be accountable. They cannot be the villain. They have to be the person who is liked. They have to be the person who everybody thinks is capable and doing these things no matter what, right? And so they will gaslight you. They're always in control of the narrative. They will praise you until you start to outshine them. And when you start to outshine them, they start to feel very threatened, and then they will isolate you and they will shut you down and they will limit your visibility. And those things look like in the office, like you may have been invited to, you know, some high profile meetings, right? And you've come to the meetings, you've been prepared, you've been able to speak to them, you've been able to do all of these things, and you've gotten accolades for that. Or maybe your manager has been given praise, like, oh, that Linda, she sure is sharp, or she's sure really capable, right? This is really incredible. And what someone with narcissistic tendencies will do will, oh, you know what, you're not really needed. Go ahead and prepare the deck for me. I don't actually need you in this meeting. Like, it's going to be really, really high. It's going to be so high level. You don't really need to be in there. We're going to discuss things that you really don't need eyes on. I'll go ahead and take this information. But they will start to take credit for the work, right? Mm. And then they start to change the narrative about you. Oh, well, you know, Linda really wasn't that great. I really had to help her a lot. Oh. She really, like, I really had to step in. And, you know, it got to the point where it was so overwhelming to go in and have to recorrect her work that I just took it on, right? You're still doing the work.
Oh, yeah.
But they're taking the credit for it because you were outshining, or you were the new shiny toy. And that just cannot happen. And women, it's so funny. I was telling one of my clients the other day, like, women play the long game. Right. Like we remember in junior high, like I remember the person who spread the rumor about me in junior high. And if I run into her, I'm going to be nice to her face, but I'm still going to remember. Right. Like we play the long game. And I think when it comes to women in the workplace that demonstrate female narcissistic, like these characteristics, they just have this super long memory and they are more conniving than men. Right. Like men will insult you and probably hit you in the face and then they'll move on. It's not a long game for them. Even male narcissists, it's not so much a long game. It is still very much in the moment, where women have got that long game. And that's really how it's showing up at work for people. Mm. But then it's like, okay, well, how do I combat this?
Right.
How do I have these conversations? What do I do? And the thing too, and I can't stress this piece enough, because I get people who are like, well, how do I get my narcissistic boss in trouble? You don't.
Right.
You do not get them in trouble. The reason they are in the position that they are in is they have learned how to navigate the politics. That's all it is, right?
Yeah.
They've learned to navigate the politics. They tell a compelling story to the people who are signing the checks. You cannot get them in trouble. So it's not about trying to get them in trouble or highlight who they are. It's about navigating them and protecting yourself and figuring out how to get out from underneath, because that is not a sustainable environment, right?
No.
And truthfully, like I'm sure many therapists would say, it's just like any abusive relationship.
True.
Like, you're not meant to be in those long, I mean, you're not meant to be in them at all, but you are not meant to be in them long-term. Think of this as an abusive relationship, and you need to learn how do you survive so you can protect yourself, protect your peace, and make an exit plan. Hmm. And you do things like not reacting, not engaging. There's a theory called the gray rock theory, where it's just, you just don't give anything. So they come and try and bait you with, oh, you look really tired today. Oh, I do? That's weird. Yeah. Like, you look really tired. Why are you so tired? You know, I didn't really, why would you say I look tired? Well, your hair's a mess. Oh, that's weird. I haven't even looked in a mirror today. Right? Like, you are not giving
so unbothered
anything, because what they're trying to do, and they feed on the chaos and they feed on the drama, and they're just trying to hook you. They're just trying to hook you into this conversation. So how can you not do that? Or it's like, I talk a lot about, like, it's a calm approach, right? Like, you look them in the eye, good morning, hello, and you move on, right? It gives them a sense of stability. So you create the sense of stability, but you don't react. If they're blowing up in a meeting, it's okay, I hear what you're saying. This is the next plan. It's all about keeping your cool and staying very detachment is the key in this. And just, it's not working. Like, you're still going to work. You're just not emotionally investing.
Sure.
And you're not allowing them to emotionally invest, like, take from you. And then it's about documentation, right? Mm-hmm. If you are in a situation where you're feeling gaslit, every conversation you should send follow-up notes. Hey, this is what I took from the conversation. Let me know if I missed anything, right? And it's not about getting their validation. It's about, hey, this is what I took from the conversation. This is what I have. Let me know, right? And when they come and change the story on you, you then have a piece of documentation where you go, nope, here's actually, you know, this was the direction we were given. Can you show me when this changed? Can you help me understand, right? And again, it's not doing anything to them, but it's protecting yourself. So you're not going, is it me? Am I the problem? Am I did that really, because you really start to second guess yourself.
Absolutely. No, that makes sense. And I love the documentation, because I think we think about that from the manager perspective. Like, oh, if I have an employee who's struggling, I'm going to document, hey, this is what we talked about, just to make sure communication's clear. But I love that from the employee standpoint, where it's, you know, it's not to be snarky, it's not to be whatever, but it's like, let's just make sure we're on the same page. And oh, by the way, 2 weeks ago, we said this, and now you're changing direction. So I love the documentating part of that. I'm sure some people would be, I don't know, offended or start to kind of like see that, but maybe that would slightly change something, probably not with a narcissist. But I love that, protecting yourself, because I luckily have never had a boss like that, but I've seen other bosses like that in a bigger organization. And, you know, they're really good at manipulation, right? So to your point, they're not going to change, number one. And number two, they're probably not going to get called out for it. And they're sometimes at the highest levels of organization. So protecting yourself and not engaging, I think, is just amazing advice. And just trying to be chill and calm, which you're probably raging inside, but, you know, just having that really nice, calm approach that they're not getting that row out of you that they're looking for. It's like the little kid who's sitting there, keeps, you know, picking at somebody, wanting a reaction. Well, don't react.
Yep.
Oh, easier said than done, but I think it's great.
It takes a lot of practice, and it's a lot of like mirror work where you're like, okay, how am I going to say this? But when you find yourself in those situations, the advice I give to people is I say, write down 3 responses. So, and the reason you write it down is because it commits to memory, but write down 3 things that you could say that sound like you, because you're never going to sound like me, and I'm not going to sound like you. So my delivery is going to be totally different than yours, but this is how you prepare for this. You write down 3 options. So you always have something to pick from, but it's already part of who you are, and it's part of the conversation, and it sounds like you. And if you practice those things, then you're, because so often people are shocked, right? They're like, I can't believe somebody just yelled at me. I'm at work and I can't believe this just happened. And they go into like stunned mode. But if you've already prepared for this and you already have your response handy, it flows.
Right.
And the first time it's scary.
Sure.
The second time it's less scary. And then after that, it just becomes very natural to who you are. And you start doing it at home with your kids and you're like, why would you say that?
Right. And practicing. I think any difficult conversation, sometimes you feel a little crazy. I used to do it in my car, like driving to work. I knew there was going to be a difficult conversation. So I would literally say it out loud. And then at least I'm not a good memorizer, but I couldn't memorize it. But at least having the conversation to myself in the car made me more prepared for those difficult conversations.
100%.
I don't miss those car rides. All right. The last difficult boss we're going to talk about is the bully boss.
Yep. Yep. So bully and narcissists kind of like sit in a similar frame, only like a bully you can like maybe correct, right? So, and again, I, first and foremost, I think, you know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s. And when my kids started going to school, I was like, this is bullying behavior. We put up with a lot. Like, we put up with a lot in the 80s and 90s. And I can't even think about like beforehand. So first and foremost, like, I think the word bully gets kicked around a lot, right? And that's why bullying behavior is not considered illegal. So when we think about like workplace behaviors that are tolerated and not tolerated, things like sexual harassment, things like hostile work environment, things like actual harassment, discrimination, those are all legal terms that have a legal definition. And bullying, because it looks so many different ways and can demonstrate so many different ways, and one person could conceive it differently than somebody else could, right? So that's why bullying is not illegal, and it's very difficult to kind of write policies and things about that. Now, most larger companies, if they have any kind of like HRT, like any HR systems, there's usually like, hey, you have to learn about sexual harassment. You have to learn about bullying, right? And discrimination.
Yep.
So we're seeing a lot more traction about bullying behavior in the workplace. But again, it's sometimes kicked around a little loosey-goosey. So the first thing to do to determine if you're being bullied is start writing everything down, right? Mm-hmm. And again, this is where people are like, I can't believe that my job, my full-time job is writing things down. And it's like, well, if you want to protect yourself and you want to like get the support that you need and work someplace that this behavior is not allowed in, you have to start documenting it. And you have to think like a detective. You have to think like date, time, exactly what was said. And I like to take it a step further and write down like the ramification of that thing that was said or done, right? And it's really crucial for you to write these things down because it helps you demonstrate a pattern of behavior. And sadly, whenever you are going to escalate this, and you should be escalating bullying behavior, the burden of proof sits on your shoulders. And so you can't go to your HR team, or you can't go to your director, or you can't go to your C-suite person and be like, Linda bullies me. Because they'll go like, okay, well, what do they do? Well, it's just a feeling. I can't act on that. Like, there's nothing that I can do, right? And even if you don't escalate it internally, even if you feel like as you're going through it, it falls in those kind of protected behaviors, you still have to provide proof. So it's time for you to start writing things down. It also solidifies what is being done, right? You might find that this manager uses sarcasm. Let's say that. And you feel like that's bullying behavior, right? But as you start to write it down, you're like, oh, maybe I actually, like this really wasn't as the thing that it was. It doesn't discount your feeling in the moment. But that's when you go have a conversation with your manager and you say, hey, listen, like, the other day when you said this thing, it really affected the way that I felt. Or, you know, I don't process sarcasm. And so when you do this, like, I don't know if you're being silly or if you're trying to cause harm, right? We can stop bullying behavior more often than not by having a conversation about it and saying, hey, when you do this thing, this is how it affects me. Can we come up with a different plan? Can we do this differently? Doesn't mean it's not a scary conversation. Sure. It's a terrifying conversation. Yeah. But you can shut down because so many people lack self-awareness that they might go, oh my word, I did not know that this is a thing, right? Or I joke with everybody this way. Well, it doesn't feel like a joke to me. It feels personal, right? It feels like you're attacking me in this situation. This is how I feel, or this is the ramifications of this. So can we make some changes? So that's the first step in even identifying a bully, is writing everything down, getting really specific. And then, you know, we have these amazing tools like ChatGPT, where you can literally take all of your documentation and put it in and say, I feel like I'm being bullied. These are the things that are being done. Am I being bullied? Right. And ChatGPT will give you an opinion.
That's amazing. I never thought about that.
It's amazing. It's amazing what you can find out. So you can go through, because sometimes we also look at it through our emotional lens.
Sure.
And so we apply it, right? Or we go tell the people in our lives these stories and they're like, oh yeah, you're totally being bullied. Right. And then you're like, I am. Right. So it's a way to like be impartial with this information. And then, like I said, the very first step, if you can, right? Now, if they're physically intimidating you, that's a different story.
Sure.
Go to HR immediately, right?
Right.
But if you go through and you're writing these things down and you're just like, yeah, I'm being bullied. If you can have the conversation with your manager. Again, they're all untrained humans that are just walking around hoping for the best. Right. Have the conversation. If you feel like you can't have the conversation, or you feel threatened, or you feel that's, then you take that documentation and you escalate it. And the best place to escalate it is within your HR team if you have an HR team. If you don't have an HR team and you're in the United States, there are outside organizations that you can escalate to, the EEOC being one of them. So these are places where you can create escalations, you can create records, and you can help protect yourself from this behavior. But again, you have to document, document, document. And then again, similar to a narcissistic, you know, manager, you've got to get out. Now you can escalate and sometimes your team will come in and jump in. Sometimes your team won't. Sometimes your HR team will be like, oh, you're being sensitive or this really isn't an issue. Or, okay, if people don't have your back, then it is time to go.
No, that's great. And, you know, all three of these types of bosses we talked about are similar but different. And I think the big takeaway is you have to deal with all of them, right? Like you just can't sit back and be miserable and take it and become so small because you think you deserve it or there's no way out or whatever it is. So it's all a little different, but whether it's documenting, having the conversation with them, because to your point, I do agree self-awareness is a major issue for so many people. So especially in the bully situation, they may have no idea they're doing it. They think they're funny, especially sarcastic people, I think get a little close to the line at times. So I think the big takeaway with all this is you need to get help. You need to document. You need to, or the last, you know, straw is to not rage quit. Hopefully,
or do if you feel like that's your only option.
Or do it and become a TikTok star. I mean, it's such a great story. I love that so much. So, in addition to all that, now that you've been doing this for a few months and you get such engagement, what has been the one topic or video that people have just been like, oh my God, this is me, and I just are so engaged with, or you've gotten so much feedback from in the last few months?
You know, I've actually had a number of them. I've been very fortunate. I think probably my very first viral post continues to get a lot of play, and it's about talking about managing high performers and how, you know, you have to show up differently for them. You have to show up, you have to be accountable. Because when you're working with a high performer holds themselves accountable. They are somebody who shows up, you know, we talked about it a little earlier. They're the person who shows up and gives 100% because that's who they are. They're bought into the process. They're bought into the mission. And managing a high performer can be very challenging if sometimes you can give them just a little bit of direction, and then you need to just get out of their way. Yep. Right. Yep. And then it's alignment. It's like, oh, you know what? We might've gone a little far on this one. Let's like pull this back a little bit. But I would say that my high performer post, which was my very first one, which has gone like 9 million on TikTok and 9 million on Instagram. Yeah. Is probably still, I still get pop-ups where it's like, oh, this one was just played. And I'm like, really cool. And that was, you know, clear back in May.
Yeah. That's amazing. And yeah, we could talk all day about the different challenges of that. But I think the whole other piece of being a manager too is you can't treat everyone the same, right? Like you have to support everyone on your team differently. And I just would always crack up when I would have one-on-ones and the difference in the conversations was just insane. Like some people needed more handholding and more details and let's go through a to-do list and like painful details because I'm not a detailed person. And others, high performers were like, here's three things. Some gone, like 10 minutes. Which again is great. So, you know, if you are managing people, it's realizing that one size does not fit all. So it's even more challenging. That's even why it's more fun to manage people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like being a parent to many, many, many children.
Yes. Yeah.
Because exactly. You have to treat them differently and you have to give empathy differently and you have to care for them differently and show interest differently. One, you need to be like, why aren't you more like your sister? And the other one be like, be less like your sister, right? Like it's kind of like that.
That's awesome. Well, this has been amazing advice. If people want to connect with you and be one, hopefully let's get you to a million followers in the next few months. So where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on TikTok and Instagram and Facebook. You can find me also on LinkedIn, but it's Linda Leeds. Linda is with a Y, and Linda.Leeds on all of those platforms. And on LinkedIn, it's Linda, again with a Y, Harvey. And I use the same picture, so I'm easily identifiable across all the platforms.
That's amazing. Well, Linda, thank you so much for being here. We greatly appreciate your insights.
Thank you so much. It was fun.
All right. I love this conversation with Linda because it wasn't just here's what's wrong. It was here's what to do next. If you're dealing with a micromanager, you heard how much of it comes down to trust and how getting proactive can sometimes shift the dynamic. If it's a narcissistic leader, Linda laid out why staying calm and detached matters, plus the power of documentation in those follow-up notes to keep the record straight when the story changes. And if it's bullying behavior, you've got a clear path. Document the details, escalate right away, and if no one has your back, it may be time to go. If this episode, unfortunately, hit home, send it to a friend or a teammate who needs it, because nobody should have to white-knuckle their way through work. If you enjoyed this episode, please follow or subscribe and leave a quick rating or review. It helps more women to find our show. Thanks for getting loud and lifted.